second canto, the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. The discussion this morning was about, it's a very interesting subject, how meditation on the pantheistic Virat Rupa conception of the Supreme Lord transits the impersonalist to a conception of God in nature, and as that sense of the presence of God in nature develops, there's a sense of being in the presence of the Almighty, and as that sense, that feeling arouses even in the impersonalist's heart, then the inclination of serving the Supreme starts to awaken, and gradually the impersonal process of meditation becomes less important, and more important becomes the mood of devotion and service to the Supreme, and in that way this Virat Rupa conception works to bring the atheist or materialist to closer to the position of service. That was our discussion this morning. And by that, not by the mechanical process per se, but by the meditation upon Virat Rupa, and so that's what's coming up is now focus on the Virat Rupa itself. The modes of nature become less in the ignorance and passion department and more in the mode of goodness department, leading towards transcendence. And the dirty things of the heart, meaning the contaminations of the broad categories of fruitive activity and mental speculation, slacken, and the various divisions of those dirty things of the heart, lust, anger, greed, and so forth. Because of the meditation, even indirectly, upon the features of the Lord, of his material opulence, material manifestations, it's indirectly meditation upon the Lord, and so meditation even indirectly upon the Supreme purifies the heart, reduces the influence of the modes of nature, brings about an indirect and gradually a more direct approach to the Supreme, awakening the mood of devotion and bringing one to further on along the path of self-realization. Of course, easily one can get stuck, and of course even more easily is one can stop and start and stop. But when there's a continuum, then it leads in progressive stages to the third chapter, pure devotional service, change in heart. So this verse, we're just going to cover one verse because it's has a lot of important understanding. It's just laying the groundwork for what the Virat Rupa is more definitively. This is text 24, chapter 1. This gigantic manifestation of the phenomenal material world as a whole is, two things are identified, the personal body of the Absolute Truth is one thing, wherein the universal resultant past, present, and future of material time is experienced. That's the translation. So this is what the Virat Rupa is. This Virat Rupa, gigantic manifestation of the phenomenal material world as a whole, is the personal body of the Absolute Truth, wherein the resultant past, present, and future of material time is experienced. So the time factor and the personal body of the Absolute Truth. So the Virat Rupa is something, Prabhupada explains, that impersonalists get off on. They like. And speculators, they like too. The devotees are not so fascinated by Virat Rupa, although Arjuna asks Krishna to show the Virat Rupa. And there are reasons why Arjuna asks. It's not because he's particularly fascinated by it. He asks Krishna to show the universal form for two primary reasons that Prabhupada identifies, as discussed in the purport as well. In the future, those that claim that I am God, then one can request that person who claims that he's God, can you please show your universal form? And to that, Prabhupada says, they will say, you do not have the eyes to see. To which one can say, Krishna gave Arjuna the eyes to see. Can you please show me your universal form? And when they are unable to show the universal form, one can say, aha, exposed. It's just one of many categories, exposed. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead does have universal form. So what is that universal form? It's disclosed in the Bhagavad Gita, what that universal form is. And it's disclosed in a somewhat different way. At least the description is a somewhat different description than we find the description in the Bhagavad Gita. In principle, it's not different. In description, it's different. So, what is that universal form? It's two things are identified by Shukadeva Goswami. It's the representative of the personal body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth. Now, the Absolute Truth, we know, has a Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha, and just for starters, the universal form is Asat. And it's not Ananda either. Arjuna verified, please. Remove this ghastly, horrible form and show your original form. But it's not full of Ananda. And it's not Chit either. It's Achit. Asat and Nirananda. But it's the personal body of the Absolute Truth. Now, impersonalists like this universal form because their idea is behind this universal form is you know what. So, just a little anecdote. In Bombay, I go to visit an Ayurvedic doctor. And once while attending his clinic, I stayed in a space that was empty, and nearby that space that was some devotee, Kanai Thakur Das, allowed me to stay in his place. And right near his home was another devotee named Chaitanya Balabh Das, disciple of Radhanath Maharaj. And Chaitanya Balabh Das's wife had been going to see for some years a yoga teacher that was known to be able to, through yoga, to perform miracles. Not miracles, yeah, miracles. Well, be able to cure people of illnesses that any other type of approach didn't work. So he was persuading and pleading and begging and nagging. And I said, all right, we'll go. So I went, you drive anywhere in Bombay, you're worn out by the time you get there. Through all the traffic and up and down. And so we finally got there. And it's a big yoga school. And because it's Bombay, it was outdoors and nice and sunny, but they had all these nice big trees that were shady, and it was nice. The atmosphere was, I don't know what part of Bombay, but you know, it was a quiet part of Bombay. And the yoga teacher came forward because he knew I was coming. You know, an American sannyasi is coming to our yoga school. So I got red carpet treatment. And their yoga class was going on, and he had everyone already primed. I could tell, you know, he was going around, this is this one, and he had this man stand up and said, you know, I had a heart problem, and all the doctors I saw 8 doctors, and everyone said surgery. And then I came to this yoga class, and you know, miracle cure within X amount of time, problem was gone, and no surgery, and high ball. And then here's another one, and this cure, and that cure, and that cure. So I was like getting pumped up for, you know, signing up on their program. And then the yoga teacher's assistant, he couldn't resist, because I saw a picture that was on just a folding chair. What's the picture on the folding chair? And I came close to look at it, and it was a picture of the universal form. And then the yoga teacher came and said, that's imagination. I said, what do you mean? He said, beyond the picture, beyond the form is formlessness. We introduce all of our students here that part of their yoga practice is to meditate upon this form, Virat Rupa. But I can tell you're a spiritual person, so I'll let you know, beyond the form is I said, thank you very much, see you later. I ain't signing up for your yoga school. I referred to him. I said, why don't you read Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 9, verses 4, 5, and 6. And the next time I see you, let's discuss those verses. I didn't give him the whole thing because it wasn't appropriate. It wasn't appropriate what he was doing either, but I didn't want to tit for tat with the man. I said, see this? This is Vaishnav Tilak. That means I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. And he's beyond the formless. So, the Virat Rupa, not only, you know, in the textbook fashion, Prabhupada does speak about the speculators, they like to speculate, and the impersonalists, they like this universal form because it's real easy for them to think that beyond this form with so many faces and hands and mouths and eyes, that there's an impersonal something. And these are just representations of the cosmic manifestation, but behind the cosmic manifestation is Brahman. Everything comes from Brahman. So the Bhagavatam is not introducing us to that. The Bhagavatam is introducing the Virat Rupa as seeing the potencies of the Supreme Lord, the opulences, the vibhuti, just like chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita is, in Prabhupada's translation in English, is the opulences of the Absolute. And in Sanskrit, it's vibhuti yoga. And vibhuti, you'll find this vibhuti term in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in chapter 3 of the first canto. In chapter 3 of the first canto, one of the six questions of the sages of Naimisharanya is addressing the incarnations of the Lord, because that's one of the questions. Can you please describe the incarnations of the Lord as they appear in this world? So he gives, Sutta gives a list without detailing, and later he details and expands on that list or gives more information of each avatar. After listing the some of the principal avatars, he then describes the Purusha avatars themselves, and then he describes the vibhutis. And vibhutis means very special or specific representations of the Supreme in this world. So it's like, you know, let's say the constellation of stars, and then a mirror that's a reflection of the constellation of stars. So that's, the stars are reflections, and the constellations are, the mirror is a reflection of those reflections. So, in other words, vibhutis are distinct from bhagas, as in Bhagavan, the opulences of the Supreme Lord in the Vaikuntha realm or the spiritual realm. Those are his opulences. The opulences of Narayan are six in number, and he who possesses those six opulences in full, that's Bhagavan. So as they're manifest in the spiritual world, it's Bhaga who possesses those Bhagas, he's Bhagavan. And he who possesses the reflections of those opulences in this material world, those opulences are called vibhutis. They're but sparks of Krishna's splendor. That's what he says at the end of the chapter. Those opulences. It's a spark from the fire, but the fire itself is so much more than the spark. So meditation on the Virat Rupa is meditation upon those vibhutis, the opulences of the Supreme Lord as they're found in this realm. So it's an indirect meditation upon he who possesses those opulences. In the purport to this verse, Prabhupada writes a quote from Vishnu Purana, and the Vishnu Purana is spoken also by Parashara Muni. It's the same one who indicated that Bhagavan means one who possesses all opulences in full, and it gives the six opulences. It's where he gives it in Vishnu Purana. So Parashara Muni, the father of Vyas, teaches Vaishnavism. He teaches the supremacy of Vishnu. And to understand Vishnu, he describes the energies of Vishnu. And so the Sri Vaishnavas who are a different sampradaya than our sampradaya, their principle, as Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita are our principal scriptural evidence or pramana, for Sri Vaishnavas it's Vishnu Purana and Padma Purana are their principal sources of evidence for their teachings. So in Vishnu Purana, it gives this example that as fire expands its rays and heat from one place, similarly the Supreme Personality of Godhead expands himself by his manifold energy, anywhere and everywhere. So it's with this understanding that Ramanujacharya presented his teaching of Vishishta Advaita. Hope you don't mind a little philosophy discussion for this afternoon. Vishishta means attributes. So the teaching of Ramanujacharya is that the attributes of Vishnu are inherently within Vishnu. Sometimes those attributes are manifest, and sometimes those attributes are not manifest. In either case, those attributes are advaita, or non-different features or attributes of the Supreme. So there's this reference. As the sun spreads its heat and its light throughout the whole universe, though that heat and light are inseparable from the sun. So the Supreme similarly exhibits all of his various energies. And his energies, they have these same different categories from Parashara Muni's narration. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta. There's the Para Shakti. Kshetragya Shakti, that's the living entity, the marginal potency, and the separated potency. So those separated potency, spiritual potency, and marginal potency, they're all potencies. And what is this material world? It's, as the others, it's a Vashishta of Vishnu, or of Parabrahman. And sometimes that energy, at least the kshetra, the field of activities for kshetra gya, sometimes that material energy is manifest, sometimes it's unmanifest, and by his will, it's manifest or unmanifest. But in either case, that material nature is inherently within him, therefore the teaching that he presents is, or is known by the name of, Vashishta Advaita. There's an Advaita relationship between his Vashishtas and himself. So Prabhupada chooses to, and our acharyas choose to make this reference in terms of explaining the Virat Rupa. The Virat Rupa is a manifestation of the Lord's, the personal form of the Absolute Truth, at least one type of the personal form of the Absolute Truth. And therefore Prabhupada says, the phenomenal manifestation of the gigantic universe is only part of his Virat body. So there are other parts of the Virat body, just as Krishna indicates in Bhagavad Gita. This whole cosmic manifestation is made of both the Paraprakriti and the Aparaprakriti. And they're both his energies and they're both under his control. From the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. There's eight separated material energies he identifies. Aside from that, there's the superior energy. Both are my energies. Aparayamitasvanyam prakritim vidhi me param. Jiva bhuta mahabaho. So, he's the energetic of those energies. It's saying very similar to the message of Vishnu Purana that's been mentioned here. So, the phenomenal manifestation, Prabhupada uses these two terms, phenomenal, noumenal. I shall now, at the beginning of the ninth chapter, I shall now describe to you all things, both phenomenal and noumenal, beyond which there's nothing to be known. So phenomenal means temporary stuff, and noumenal means doesn't change. So the soul is in the doesn't change position. That's from the second chapter. But that soul is also prakriti. It's para-prakriti, but it's prakriti. It's Krishna's prakriti. And then there's apara-prakriti, the inferior prakriti, temporary manifestation. It's now you see it, now you don't manifestation. Now it's in this form and then it changes and then it's gone position. But it's gone means it's only unmanifest, unmanifest for our inspection to see because of our limited capacity for seeing or perceiving things. It nonetheless exists and then exists in a manifest state and then exists in an unmanifest state. And the switch, the volume control is in Krishna's hand. He can make it manifest, and make it manifest intensely, make it manifest mildly, make it disappear. Because it's his prakriti. So the Virat Rupa is the one part of this phenomenal manifestation. It's the temporary manifestation of the subtle and gross material elements. And within those subtle and gross material elements, there are vibhutis. There are particular opulences, particularly stunning representations of the spiritual realm. And the Bhagavatam is teaching us different than this yogi in Bombay was trying to teach, that meditation on the Virat Rupa gives us an idea of the wonderful Supreme Lord who's behind these opulences. These are but sparks of his splendor. So then, in the beginning, this, I'm going to read just the first paragraph, or parts of the first paragraph of this verse, the purport of this verse. Anything either material or spiritual, is but an expansion of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that we've covered. Inferior, superior, but they're both energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 13:13, the omnipotent Lord has his transcendental eyes, heads, and other bodily parts distributed everywhere. It sounds like, you know, an accident on the highway or something. Thirteen, Bhagavad Gita actually is a different verse. It's, I think this is a typographical error. It's 13:14. The Sarvata Pani Padam Tat, that phrase is 13:14. 13:13 comes right after that list of the items of knowledge, 8 through 12. What is knowledge and what's the object of knowledge? Jnanam and Gayam. So he gives the items of knowledge, 8 through 12. And then in 13 he says, I shall now explain to you Gayam, the knowable. Okay, well now we're getting down to business here. Knowing which, you will taste the eternal. Okay, let's hear it. Brahman! Ooh. The spirit, beginningless and subordinate to me. Okay, now we're getting there. Because Brahman is the effulgence of Parabrahman. So, Brahman, the spirit, beginningless and subordinate to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of the material world. So if Brahman lies beyond the cause and effect of material world, then Parabrahman also lies beyond the cause and effect of the material world. That's pretty easy. Then 13:14 is this Sarvatak Pani Padang Tat. Oh, what's going on? Everywhere his hands and legs and his eyes and heads and faces and everywhere. He has ears everywhere. And in this way, the super soul exists, pervading everything. So if you, those of you who've been following this first chapter, Canto 2, Supersoul was introduced as meditation upon Vishnu and the limbs of Vishnu, and then all of a sudden it went into this Virat Rupa. And so it seems that 13.14 is doing a similar thing. Supersoul, who has his eyes, ears, and hands, and mouths, and teeth, and everywhere. What's the relationship between this Virat Rupa and Supersoul? It's a nice question. So, let's turn to the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And I'm going to ask you, this is a Bhagavad Gita quiz question, so everybody sit up straight. You're going to test your comprehension of the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Hands raised when you have the answer. Uh-oh, Maharaj is getting serious. Okay. The text 4 from chapter 9. Mayata tamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matsthani sarva bhutani nachaham teshu avastitaha. Krishna says, by me, in my unmanifested form, avyaktamurti. Okay? This entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. So, question. What is this avyaktamurti? We can leave it a, you know, just essay question or fill in the blank or multiple choice. What kind would you like?
Multiple
choice. Of course, we'll have to put all of the above as a A. Does this refer to Paramatma as the all-pervasive Supersoul? By me, the entire universe is pervaded. Or B, does this mean the vibhutis or the energies of the Supreme Lord are spread everywhere and in this way he spread everywhere? Does it refer to Paramatma? Does it refer to the Virat Rupa? Or C, does it refer to either one of them? Or D, is it both of them? Who wants to volunteer? I don't see any hands. One brave soul.
They're non-different.
Which is non-different?
Both A and B. Different manifestations.
Okay, so you're saying option D, both.
Could be either of those.
Yeah, so that's option D. You weren't so brave at Okay. Any other volunteers?
A.
Huh?
A.
Paramatma.
I would say D.
Huh?
I would say D.
D.
A.
A. Do we hear any?
Here's B.
B.
Rather, can you make it more simple, true or false?
The laughter that, just to share this with you, the laughter that you're all laughing with the same resounding, like, whole body laugh, the Harvard Divinity School audience were laughing when people were interviewed, what is the meaning of life? Meaning of life. That's That's a good question. The meaning, I have to think about it. I was really, it was just person after person after person after person after person. The meaning of life. So, how are we going to understand? We're surrounded by this material creation, and we need to understand our relationship with it. What is our relationship with nature? And it has certainly to do, if one has a spiritual conception, it has everything to do with our, that's us and material nature's relationship with the Supreme. We're Prakriti, we're both Prakriti of the Supreme. And Paraprakriti is not meant for exploiting the Apara Prakriti. It's meant for recognizing the proprietorship of Apara Prakriti and using Apara Prakriti in service to Parabrahman. So I'll read a little bit from the purport and then we'll ask again option A, B, C, or D. Here it is said that although he is all-pervading, everywhere present, he is not conceivable by the material senses. This is indicated here by the word avyaktamurti. But actually, although we cannot see him, everything is resting in him. Sounds like super soul. But actually, though we cannot see him, just like Dhruva's explanation that just like there's fire stored within wood, and when the fire burns of different colors, but it's but fire. Because of the differences of wood, the fire appears to be a different color, but it's only fire. And so similarly, there's different forms of this world, but those forms of this world are but manifestations of the Lord's energy, and he's present everywhere, manifesting them, maintaining them, and then destroying them. It's all but a manifestation of you who are standing before me. I offer my obeisances unto you. Meaning, I see all these manifestations of things and varieties as but some little aspect of your energy. So Prabhupada writes the same as we have discussed in the seventh chapter. So seventh chapter, there's the eight separated and the material energies and the para-prakriti, the soul. This entire cosmic manifestation is only a combination of his two energies, superior spiritual energy and inferior material energy. Just as, now here's the giveaway to which is the answers. Just as the sunshine is spread all over the universe, same as the Vishnu Purana reference that Prabhupada made in the purport to the Bhagavatam. Just as the sunshine is spread all over the universe, the energy of the Lord is spread all over the creation, and everything is resting in that energy. So that's the intended meaning. It's the Virat Rupa answer. Whichever one that was, B. Huh? So, it doesn't mean that A is wrong. Madhusudan feels better. Next paragraph. Yet one should not conclude that because he is spread all over, he has lost his personal existence. Oh, once I was one, then I became many, and now I'm, you know, I, Krishna, or the absolute truth is spread all over the place. That's the pantheistic, the impersonal pantheistic conception. Not the impersonal pantheistic conception, but the personal conception, Om Purnama Dak Purnamidam, Purnat Purnamo Dachate. Although so many expansions are made, the Supreme absolute remains unchanged, not spread and therefore dissipated, like the piece of paper that's ripped into little pieces and then the original paper is gone, but the paper is now spread out little pieces all over the floor. Because Prahlad was just here. Whoops. He's laughing now. Okay. To refute such an argument, the Lord says, I am everywhere, but, and everything is resting in me, but still I'm aloof. Now, here's another example besides the piece of paper example or the sun and the sunshine example. Here's another example. For example, a king heads a government, which is but the manifestation of the king's energy. It's not the king is spread all over the place. Like Paramatma is manifest within every atom. The king, he's in his castle, his palace, or wherever he is. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king. And each department is resting on the king's power. So this reference is the Virat Rupa reference. Does it mean that the Paramatma is also all-pervasive? For that matter, there's three all-pervasives. Brahman is all-pervasive, Paramatma is all-pervasive, and the energies of the Supreme in this material creation are all-pervasive. It could mean any one of those three. In this particular reference, by the grace of our founder Acharya and the previous Acharyas, we are to understand this Avyaktamurti means his potencies, and then sometimes those potencies are manifest, and it's the power of the Supreme that manifests the manifest state. He's the storehouse of all power, all potency, and then some potencies are manifest, spread everywhere. Still, although he has his potencies, some of them are manifest, some of them he's holding, he has his existence. This is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. It's not Vishishta Advaita philosophy. What Prabhupada is taking us down the path of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. Still, Krishna's existence is separate. Although those attributes or those potencies are his potencies, still, he has a separate existence. The potent and the potency are one and simultaneously different. So, back to the Virat Rupa and chapter 1 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This Virat Rupa, I find it a very difficult subject to understand. I find it much easier to understand Krishna's transcendental form than the Virat Rupa. It's how does the Lord have a temporary form made of material nature? And the impersonalists, they like that. Yes, the Lord has many hands, many faces, and it's all imaginary. And what's not imaginary is, you know what? The oneness of Brahman. It's all resting upon Brahman. But then the oneness of Brahman is resting upon Krishna. Oops. They want to hit the delete button with that one. Because that diversity to them means duality. Not within the realm of the absolute, there's also diversity. Or as Prabhupada writes earlier in this chapter, it's very difficult for ordinary people to accept the conception that the absolute truth is a person. Because we discussed this, but absolute truth sounds like it is. And person, how do you put person in with it is? It's just impersonal. We're so prone to impersonal conception that to think of the absolute truth as form, personality, and activities, it's beyond our experience. But so is Brahman. It's inconceivable. So, therefore, what Prabhupada writes in this Bhagavatam purport is, the asuras do not accept any evidential proof from the revealed scriptures. You can get over the hurdle of how does this work by understanding, by descending knowledge, the mercy of descending knowledge. That's how. Or when going back to something that Prabhupada said so eloquently before, that this process of devotion is not merely an intellectual or academic pursuit, that by your prowess, by your efforts, by your IQ, by your strident efforts, you'll figure it out. You'll penetrate the mystery of the absolute truth and then figure it out. Like some of the other efforts that we've made in the ascending process of academia and preparing yourselves for career and et cetera, et cetera. It's not like that. Rather, when the absolute truth, Krishna, sees the sincere desire of the candidate to want to come to the position of serving him and knowing him and loving him, and does so by approaching through his representatives, his dear devotees, and he stands before you and reveals himself to you. That's how it happens. And it's accessible right in the pages of the scripture if the aptitude, the submissive oral reception aptitude, is what we're carrying in our hearts, not the figure-it-out aptitude, the speculative tendency. If we drop the speculative tendency and just try to approach this subject as Krishna is purifying my soul and by spiritualizing my intelligence and purifying my mind, I just expose myself to this in a submissive inquiry mode, the absolute truth will become revealed, and not otherwise. It's a descending process, in other words. So, those that are asuras, they don't want descending knowledge. They don't want the authority of the scripture, or our great acharyas said, harumph, I want to figure it out. It's not going to happen that way. The logic of that, Prabhupada says, is like holding a flashlight, or using the other term, a torch, and looking for the sun. What is the wisdom of finding the sun by using a flashlight? The sun reveals itself. So it's not our aptitude of figuring things out that discloses the absolute truth. It's the absolute truth discloses when the right disposition of consciousness is there. And the directions of scripture are given, and one follows those directions of scripture. Through the able guidance of those who are representatives of the Supreme, who have followed that same path themselves, they have that aptitude themselves, and they're training others in that aptitude. So, therefore, they cannot see the gigantic body of the Lord as Virat, which will answer their challenge. And since they are accustomed to paying homage to superior material strength, like that of a tiger, elephant, or lightning, meaning the aborigines, the idea is, they're even in primitive, Rupa Goswami writes this in Upadesha, in Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that the tendency for worship is there in all classes of beings, evidenced by even the aborigine will worship something wonderful in nature. They'll worship a river, or they'll worship a bird, or a bird feather, or the sun, or a tree, or something. Something, a waterfall, something wonderful in nature. They'll do so because the tendency is there. And why some particular thing? There may be some ritual involved, but it's appreciating some higher power, a sign or something splendorous, a higher power. Arjun gets the same message when he asks Krishna in this Divisions of Faith chapter. Essentially his question is, chapter 12, if someone doesn't have faith in your words, don't they have faith in something? And meaning, is not faith intrinsic to the soul? And Krishna's answer is yes. According to the modes of nature, one will have faith. The divisions of faith, when materially conditioned, are according to good dispassion and ignorance. And then, of course, there's transcendental faith. So how does one get transcendental faith? It's something that's already there. It just needs to be awakened or sparked. Like there's fire in wood. It can be brought out by contact with fire. And then the fire comes out. So the intrinsic faith comes out when in contact with one who's carrying that faith. Or bhakti is awakened by bhakti, by one who's carrying bhakti. Bhakti is the cause of bhakti. So it's great fortune to come in contact with one who's carrying bhakti. What to speak of making that your primary association in this world, those who are carrying bhakti. Build your bhakti fire very strong through bhakta association. And then the absolute truth becomes more and more palpably manifest. So like the Virat Rupa meditation, it makes the presence of the Almighty felt, not just intellectualized, but felt. So by performing devotional service together, it makes the presence of the internal potency of the Lord felt. And through the internal potency of the Lord, the Lord's personal presence is felt. So, just concluding this, this whole discussion, this is like a refrain message, but the whole discussion of Virat Rupa is not the highest message Bhagavad or Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting. But it's being asked about in detail by Shukadeva Goswami because he's a compassionate Vaishnava. He understands some souls are not inclined to just surrender to Krishna. If that's the only option, they're not going to follow anything. They'll just be unregulated sense gratifiers. And so this other description is there as a gradual process of awakening and appreciation for a supreme person by meditating on things wonderful within nature. And seeing those wonderful things in relation to the Supreme. Hare Krishna. Dana Kelly.
So in this discussion of Virat Rupa, you just concluded that it's to give persons an opportunity to evolve in their appreciation for Supreme and to develop a service attitude, at least a desire to have service attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
But like in Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna lists the type of persons who approach him, he lists people like people who are just materially fried or suffering, people who are in want of money. He doesn't list as the persons who approach him those who have gone through the process of impersonal realization. They've gotten some little seed of appreciation or service attitude. It doesn't sound like the people who approach him, you know, for want of money or because they're in distress, are have developed this type of service attitude or even a real appreciation of the personality that they're supposed to serve.
So you want to conclude the?
Well, I'm just.
Why
does Bhagavatam is stressing this progression from non-personalism to impersonalism to personalism, but it seems like Krishna is saying just people who, you know, want money or are fried, or even you just look at Prabhupada coming to America, or I look at my life, I didn't do that. I went from just being a
because you had Prabhupada's
mundane,
association.
Mundane.
Okay. Okay. You're presenting a contrast, and the punchline is why do we hear this description in the Bhagavatam and what appears to be a different description in Bhagavad Gita? That's your question.
Seemingly different, yes.
Seemingly different. The Bhagavatam is describing a particular type of approach by which one can become his devotee. And in another reference in Bhagavad Gita, I'm trying to recall exactly what that reference is, but Krishna says there are different categories of persons who worship me. Those who worship me as one in many, and the diverse something, something, something. Where is that verse?
One without a second.
Yeah. Do you recall where that verse is in Bhagavad Gita? I'd like to read the verse. Anybody? Bhagavad Gita buffs here?
Chapter 9.
Towards the end. Just after that? Okay. Yes, that's where it is. Chapter 14, excuse me, text 14, Satatam Kirtiyantomam. That's explaining the highest position. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Then there's lesser categories of those who fall in the category of being his devotees. Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge, or they worship the Supreme Lord as one without a second, as diverse in many. That's this one. Oh, and in the universal form. Look at that. Bahudha Vishvato Mukham. So they're worshiping the universal form. Krishna is accepting them as his devotees. Now, what's the motivation of those who are worshiping the universal form in order to achieve the Supreme? There can be different motivations. So that verse that you're chatur vidhava jente mam jana sukritan orjana, so there's some motivation and or a mix of those motivations. So these persons, they, it's, you know, Maharaj Parikshit or someone who is about to die, they want some relief from their distress. That's a motivation. They turn to God when they're in the hot seat. Death is approaching. So that verse is describing the motivation, and these other verses are describing categories of how they might engage themselves in some devotional service or worship of Krishna.
Is it the same as Chanta Rasa in the ocean? No.
At that stage, it's not a particular rasa. It's just trying to form a personal conception. At least that's my understanding. What that may lead to is devotional service, which may unfold in any one of the different rasas.
Many of the scientists who are trying to understand the universe while they were shipping the Rakrita.
If you were to ask them that question, what would they say? No way.
As per our understanding, like, they are trying to understand this view, like, trying to see the universe. Like,
but they're not trying to see the universe in relation to God. They have other motivations. So they're not worshippers of the Virat Rupa. They're enamored by it, but they're not worshippers of it. They're bewildered by it. Shriram?
As for those aspiring personas who still are in the mode of passion and ignorance, for them, those who cannot do the satatam, who cannot chant, glorify names, or do the bhakti process continuously, yeah. When they are not able to do so, is it the message of this chapter that if you see the multifarious energies around you, see it as belonging to the Lord and appreciate
it? Yes. Like Prabhupada, to amplify your point, Prabhupada said, God realization is very easy. Even the intoxicated alcoholic can realize God. And here's how. When they're drinking their wine, they can think, ah, Krishna is the taste of this wine. And by that thought of Krishna, although they're engaged in something sinful and mode of ignorance, they can purify themselves by that thought of Krishna. As Rasoham Apsokantaya, just by the Krishna is the taste of water. The ability of man, the light of the sun. So by meditating, those are opulences, those are vibhutis, by which the Supreme Lord, who is the possessor of those vibhutis, can be indirectly approached. It will purify such a person. Yes.
Maharaj, we study in the Bhagavatam that it is, it's the most pristine form of religion. It is for people who are without any motivation towards religion, economic development, sense gratification, and even liberation.
So why is this stuff in there?
And it's for people who wish to worship Krishna through their intelligence. Then why do we see, especially the first step of God realization?
And why is this stuff in there? That's your question.
Correct.
Yes. Prabhupada answers that question in this way, that the Vedas are the desire tree, and from the desire tree, all fruits are found. But in this desire tree, the desire tree of the Bhagavatam, the fruit of love of God is found. And so, the Bhagavatam is not only for the Paramahamsa Vaishnavas. This Bhagavatam is for the Janata Agha. Tad Vag Visargo Janata Agha Viplava. It's for sinful persons. And everybody in between. It's for everybody. And so, the Paramahamsas, or at least, you know, aspiring to be Shuddha Bhaktas, can appreciate even this Virat Rupa meditation can lead one to Shuddha Bhakti, Prema Bhakti. It's not the highest thing, but it can lead to the highest thing. It can directly lead to the highest thing if one is properly guided. So, that which awakens love of God, that's true religion. Therefore, it's there. Anything else? Hey, well.
If there's a developmental sequence that appreciation for things in nature eventually lead one further coming to you.
Yes, there is a sequence.
So, how is it that the person who's appreciating the Brahman form is actually not appreciating the nature form of Krishna? Why is it that it's sort of pushed aside and treated as imaginary? If there is that sequence, surely it's the person coming to the point of appreciating Brahman would have that too. So I'm a little puzzled why the yogi person would not have that appreciation there.
Well, there are two categories. There's the envious and the non-envious. And the envious don't have appreciation. And the non-envious have no problem appreciating. Just like the four Kumaras. They were Brahman realized. And they were not envious. So when features of the opulences of the Lord came to their attention, they were attracted at the gates of Vaikuntha. But such meditation on Virat Rupa is also not a problem for them. But then there are those that are envious. That is, if there is a supreme person, then I'm number two. I don't want to be number two. I want to be number one. So, philosophically, I just put number one out of existence and I become number one. And what's number one? Brahman. I am Brahman. You are Brahman. We are Brahman. It's all one. Now, as soon as you have varieties, we got a problem. Because then there's not just one. So here's what we do. Watch this one. They don't exist. It's imagination. And what's behind imagination is reality. That's who we are. We're Brahman. Because I just, you know, I got this attitude towards number one. I just got to philosophically put him out of commission. Watch him disappear. It's imagination. Poof. I'm God. I've always wanted to be God. And I just did it. Just varieties don't exist. Just a wave of my magic wand of philosophical speculation and boom! This light doesn't exist. Go ahead. Meditate on beautiful things in nature. Just know that behind those beautiful things in nature, it's all one.
Thank you.
It's just imagination. It's just for weak-minded people. Don't want to admit reality. Go ahead. Indulge yourself a little. Worship some forms. Just understand. Beyond the form, it's all one. Now we'll go back to the other side. There are some that have an appreciation of beyond the temporary, there's an eternal reality that exists. And that's called Brahman. And I don't have an attitude problem towards Parabrahman. I just am not informed about or have never been introduced to Parabrahman. And then that there are opulences of Parabrahman within this realm, that's not a problem either. Because they don't have an attitude problem. But those that are envious, it's a problem. Anything else? Yes.
So the two contrasting views, understanding that you gave your answer, are they the Brahmavadis and the Mayavadis?
Yes, yes. The Mayavadis have a predisposition. That's their attitude problem. And Brahmavadis don't have a predisposition. They're inquisitive about Brahman, the absolute truth. And such persons, when they come in contact with the absolute truth, are very happy. Ramante yogino ananti sachiranande atmani. They're very happy. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantas chadridhavrata. So they just need association of those that are carrying a personal conception.
Parapakruti of the Purushottama, or is there a link between these relations to divisions of Para and Purushottama and Apara?
You asked me. You follow? You got some terminology that's a little different than...
No, you were mentioning Parapakruti and Aparapakruti.
Yeah, those are different than Purusha.
They are different than Purusha.
Yeah.
So... for the seeker who is trying to... So the different levels of realization, like Brahman realization, Parabrahman realization...
Paramatma realization.
Paramatma realization. And...
Bhagavan realization.
Do they fall... Do they have any sequence? Are they in any way related to the first ones we mentioned? The Prakriti, Paraprakriti? No.
No. The Prakriti is the energy, and the absolute truth is Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. They're the energies of the absolute truth. The absolute truth is the energetic, and the Prakritis are the energy. Does that help? Thank you very much. You look forward to it.